Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
105 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986. 615-737-WWTN. Well, apparently Joy Behar has now apologized to Mike Pence. I think that the folks over there at ABC, they realized just how many people Joy Behar really angered when she basically called into question the mental fortitude of Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence, talking about how he and Jesus talk, basically making fun of prayer. You remember the comments that she made several weeks ago, and now apparently word is out that she did indeed apologize to Mike Pence, but I don't think that's enough. Now, here's what's interesting. What's interesting is the fact that this is a woman who said what she said about prayer and said what she said about Christianity and again, the Vice President of the United States, basically saying, you remember back on February 13th, Behar criticized Pence's faith by saying that hearing from Jesus is actually called a, quote, mental illness. The Media Research Center launched a campaign to hold View co-hosts accountable for spewing anti-Christian bigotry. And ABC received more than 30,000 phone calls from angry viewers. Now, this is from Fox News. Now, here's what's fascinating. What's fascinating is, can you imagine if it was 30,000 liberals that were angry? ABC News would be falling all over themselves trying to apologize on the air. But apparently, if it's just Christians that you upset, well, then they feel like one phone call to the vice president is more than enough. So that is what happened, is Behar made the comments on The View. And I don't know how many people watch that show. I'm sure it's in the millions. And so she decided that instead of apologizing to those thousands, millions of Christians that she no doubt insulted, she thought that one private phone call to the vice president would suffice. At least that is according to Bob Iger, one of the big head honchos over there to ABC News. Now, one of the things that was going on is they were having some sort of a shareholders discussion or shareholders call. And one guy who somebody was very upset with Joy Behar, his name is Justin Danhoff. He is a shareholder. And he asked Bob Iger directly. Here's the quote on the call with all those people listening. He said to Bob Iger, "What do you say to the tens of millions of Christians and President Trump supporters that your networks have so blatantly offended and ascribed hateful labels?" And he's saying this to Iger directly at Thursday's meeting yesterday. Specifically, he asked, "Do you think, like Mrs. Hostin and Mrs. Behar, that the Christian faith is akin to a dangerous mental illness?" Now, imagine if you're, you know, Bob Iger, and you had 30,000 angry Christians calling your television network, and now you're getting hit with this on a shareholders call. Here's what Iger had to say, and this is why it's making headlines today. Iger responded by saying, quote, "I don't know where I start. First of all, Joy Behar apologized to Vice President Pence directly. She made a call to him and apologized, which he says I thought was absolutely appropriate." Iger told the crowd that he was, quote, "glad to hear Behar apologize because he takes exception to what she said. He said, I don't think it was right." But wouldn't you think that a public apology would be needed? I mean, to be honest, what she did was tremendously insulting to Christians. What she said was tremendously insulting to anyone, in my opinion, anybody who has ever prayed to God. Because she basically said that's a sign of mental illness. When you are speaking to God and God is hopefully speaking back to you, well, that's a sign of mental illness. By the way, forget about the whole thing with Oprah Winfrey and how Oprah was waiting for some word of God as to whether or not she was going to run for president of the United States. That's a whole different thing. But forget about the fact that nobody said anything about what Oprah said, but it was all about what Mike Pence said. She made fun of Christians. She made fun of prayers. She akined Christianity to a mental illness. And you would think that that would be something that the network would force her to apologize for. Can you imagine Who is the there's a conservative on The View, McCain. Meghan McCain. I think is Meghan McCain on The View? I think she is.
She is.
Can you imagine if Meghan McCain said something about the LGBT community that somebody found insulting? She would be on there apologizing like nobody's business, I'm assuming. And the network would force Meghan McCain to make a public apology, and a very public apology. But not Joy Behar for saying what she said about Christianity. So how'd the big phone call go between she and Mike Pence? Well, Pence was willing, apparently, to turn the other cheek, according to Fox News, when Behar reached out privately, according to a White House source. But Behar, whose apology only made news when Bob Iger acknowledged it at a shareholders meeting yesterday, found sorry, they say, was the hardest word to utter to her TV show's audience. He says, yeah, she apologized to the vice president, and he accepted and said he was not offended by her comment for his own sake, but on behalf of the millions of Christians who watch ABC and her show. You know, I wonder how many Christians really watch The View. I mean, we know.
I bet a bunch.
You think?
Yeah.
Given what Joy Behar said?
Well, I think a bunch were offended after that. But I think a lot of female Christians probably watch the show.
Yeah.
They may yell at it from time to time. But.
Yes. Well, you know, that is all part of what The View does. And you know, talk radio, generally speaking, whether it's on television or radio. Anyway, Bob Iger acknowledged it at a shareholders meeting. And he says that, according to Joy Behar, he, Mike Pence, encouraged her to make the same apology publicly on the show that she did privately to him. And as far as I know, and just so everybody knows, I'm not a View watcher, but as far as I can tell, no. As a matter of fact, there have not been any public apologies from Joy Behar. And that's really a shame because, as I said, if this was a situation where she had, where one of the hosts had insulted one of these PC groups, LGBT or whatever it is, they'd be falling all over themselves. And so, but not real surprising. Also, CBS, I heard Phil talking about this yesterday. This was in my stack yesterday. And because of the roundtable and all these other things. Oh, by the way, very quickly, speaking of the roundtable, if you're curious as to how it looked, there are some really good pictures on the WTN Facebook page. And also, I have shared it on my Facebook page as well. If you want to check out the photographs, you can. Some great shots of Michael, Phil, and also Brian Wilson. Really, really good pictures. So if you want to check that out, you certainly can. People are asking for a podcast. We're going to get that up as well. CBS, of course, is now apparently urging Oprah Winfrey to run against President Trump. And, you know, it's interesting. Does anybody at CBS not understand how utterly transparent they are being when they're sitting here talking about Oprah Winfrey and how Gayle King, best friend to Oprah Winfrey, Gayle King, is now doing whatever she can to try and convince Oprah to run. And so, Belle, if you could get ready to play that audio. This is Gayle King and Oprah Winfrey on CBS a couple of days ago.
I also think she have a very unique ability in terms of healing and connecting all people. And
I have great compassion for people.
Yes,
I do that.
I know that. I think I know that.
It's like I want to throw up in my mouth just a little bit.
What do you think Maya would say? It's one of these times I really wish Maya was here.
Oh,
what do you think that she would say?
Really?
She'd
say, baby, listen to your own heart.
I read somebody said that if you ran, the day you decided to run, half the country would hate you immediately.
That is true.
Why are you telling her that, Bianna?
How would that be? Because I feel that she could overcome it.
Why are you telling her that?
She could overcome it. It doesn't have to be.
You are not helping.
There's always, always hope.
Even Gayle said when she comes in to try to convince me that I should run for president, says, look, it's not going to be good for you. She goes, it's not even going to be good for me.
Yeah, just stop it already. And so I don't know what that was. That was so, when I saw that, I thought it was so utterly contrived. Clearly, Oprah, and I've said this before, because whenever I see her on TV now, she's wearing those damn glasses, like glasses make you qualified to run for president. And a lot of people are trying to say, oh, well, Oprah Winfrey, you know, she's a celebrity just like Donald Trump, just like President Trump. It goes so far beyond that because President Trump, as I've explained before, the president is somebody who has been dealing with the government and foreign governments for a long time. We can't say that about Oprah Winfrey. It takes a lot more in this country to work out our problems than to just say, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. And in defense and in fairness to Oprah, even she said, in the midst of this conversation, even she said, listen, it takes a lot more than just being able to heal and connect people to be able to run the United States. And so I think that one of the things that's happening is Oprah knows darn right well that she's not going to run for president. But I think clearly she is really enjoying all of this attention that she's getting because, you know, all these people in Hollywood and all these people on TV, they're attention whores. I mean, they really are. That's why they do what they do. They are attention whores. And so for Oprah, this whole appearance on CBS with her best friend, Gail King, and some of these other folks who are on this TV show, clearly it was one of those things that was so utterly contrived. And it was, to me, it was rather silly. I mean, it really was. And I've shared with you the stories of all of these folks that are on the left. And every time Oprah Winfrey is on TV and they're asking her, begging her to run for president of the United States, one of the things that they always say, and one of the things that I always say is, okay, well, what that tells you is that the Democrats, they are in a huge amount of trouble. So we'll have to see what happens with Oprah. I personally, again, I don't think that she's going to run for president because of the fact that, and they just said it, once you announce that you're going to run for president of the United States, you know what happens. You are immediately hated by half the country. Now, I don't think I would say that you're immediately, quote unquote, hated. But what I would say is that, especially in the case of Oprah Winfrey, you would have to ask the question, okay, so what qualifies you to be president of the United States? What qualifies you to be somebody, even though, you know, they say on that, they said that she has this a weird ability, whatever, to heal and connect all people, which I just don't know if that's true. I mean, listen, you can have a successful TV show and you can do all these things that Oprah has done, but I don't necessarily think that from a political standpoint, she's going to be able to do anything like that. But again, one of the problems that people have in this country is that they don't have the right understanding of what politics is all about. For example, I knew that President Trump almost right away, within the first couple of weeks, that the president had touched a nerve with this country. And he really brought something to the fore that was something that was being felt by many, many Americans. They were angry with Washington, D.C. They were angry with political correctness. They were angry in the fact that they were being ignored. They were angry with the fact that our immigration laws were not being enforced. They were angry with radical Islamic terrorism and nobody calling it for what it was. And so that's what the president tapped into. And you could call it dystopian. You can call it hateful. You can call it racist. You can call it anything you want to call it. But if you've got Oprah Winfrey and some of these other folks on the left that are saying, oh, you can heal and connect all people, really? So ultimately, Oprah Winfrey and the left and the media falling all over themselves, talking about wanting to have Oprah run for president of the United States. Ultimately, what that is exactly what people voted against in 2016. Because to me, say what you will about Oprah Winfrey, but a lot of what she does and a lot of what she talks about on her show, a lot of times it's feelings and emotions. And for me, a lot of feelings and emotions, a lot of time, oftentimes, it's based in political correctness. And so there's nothing that Oprah is going to be able to do to solve the problems in this country by political correctness. Political correctness is what has really derailed our country in a lot of different ways. I mean, we could talk about welfare benefits. We can talk about radical Islamic terrorism. We can talk about the rise of Black Lives Matter. We could talk about illegal immigration. We could talk about folks who are coming into this country illegally. And good Lord, you start looking at where political correctness has absolutely derailed our country in so many different ways. Well, to me, that's what Oprah Winfrey represents. It's daytime television. It's political correctness. And so the more that people talk about wanting Oprah Winfrey to run for president of the United States, for me, it's like, you know what, bring it on. I mean, I would welcome it. I'd think it's silly. I think it would be great for the Republicans and horrible for the Democrats. But as I said, I would say bring it on because what she represents to me is wrong with what America, it's what's wrong with America these days. And again, it's two words, political correctness. It is at 120 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. A guilty plea for the man who attacked Rand Paul. And the Tennessee Titans release more players from the team today. These stories and more are coming up at 1:30 on WTN.
126 on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandy Show. Appreciate you being here. So much to talk about. Hey, by the way, 1:35, Jamie McIntyre from the Washington Examiner is going to be joining us. Going to talk about all things North Korea. One of the big questions that I think the president needs to work with Kim Jong-un when they have their big meeting is, okay, well, can we get our Americans back? They're being held captive in North Korea. So that and many other questions will be discussed and analyzed with Jamie McIntyre at 1:35 here on WTN. I love this, by the way. Speaking of North Korea, now apparently there could be a movement to try and get President Trump some sort of a Nobel Peace Prize over the North Korean denuclearization. Now, we all know that President Obama, way back when, got the Nobel Peace Prize for essentially doing nothing at all. Fox News is reporting that a statement is imminent from the White House announcing that President Trump is going to sit down with North Korean leader, which I believe that has already happened. We're still waiting on an exact date, though. But here's what Luke Messer, this Republican out of Indiana, has to say. If North Korean talks lead to concrete action, President Trump should well be on his way to his own Nobel Peace Prize. North Korea is signaling for the first time a willingness to discuss disarming its nuclear capabilities. So we'll have to see what happens. I think that would be an amazing accomplishment for President Trump. And I was talking about this earlier. When you look at the coverage of North Korea, and when you look at everything that the typically very much against President Trump mainstream media, what they're saying about the president's accomplishments regarding North Korea, remember, these are the same people that have been saying all along that the president is a nothing but a bully, and the president is going to tweet us into some sort of a nuclear war with North Korea. Now they have absolutely changed their tune. If you were watching a TV last night, if you're watching some of the mainstream media and also some of the cable channels, specifically CNN and MSNBC, I mean, they were really talking up President Trump. They were really saying that this is an absolutely brilliant move and a huge accomplishment for President Trump. The fact that he, this president, of all the other presidents, not even President Obama, was able to get Kim Jong-un to this place and time. Now, here's what's amazing. Wasn't it? It was, I think, last year. We were even talking about this on this show, where there have been groups in South Korea that have even said, guaranteed that by the fall of 2018, you will see Kim Jong-un come to the table because the president is backing him into a corner. And so we've seen warming relations between North and South Korea. We know what happened with the Winter Olympics. And now Kim Jong-un is saying that he will indeed sit down with President Trump. And President Trump said, okay. And so this is all, while it's a big surprise to a lot of folks, to me, we've seen organizations that watch these kinds of things. And they're saying that the way the president has handled Kim Jong-un with the tweets and with standing up to him in a very public way is exactly what was needed and exactly the way that our government should have been dealing with Kim Jong-un all along. So we'll get all the latest from Jamie McIntyre at 1:35 here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
And finally, oh Lord, oh Lord. Fans of HBO's hit series The Sopranos can look forward to a movie prequel of the popular series that ended in 2007. It's called The Many Saints of Newark and is set in the 1960s during the era of the race riots in that area. New Line Cinema has bought the screenplay from David Chase, the show's creator and writer. Were you a fan of, did you ever watch The Sopranos?
No, you know, I never got into The Sopranos.
Lord.
I know that the last scene featured Don't Stop Believin' from Journey, so right. I have seen that episode.
Well,
but that's actually
you've only just seen that episode.
Actually, just that one scene. That's it. Well, Tony Soprano and his family sitting there eating food in a diner. Yeah,
Pamela, Dan is the guy that you could go, do you like cheeseburgers? And he'd be like, I've never had one.
You know what's funny about that? I don't like cheese on hamburgers.
We know.
You know what's funny?
I just don't like it when you say cheeseburger. You don't say burger the way I like it.
Cheese.
It just drives
burger?
Me nuts.
Burger?
Yeah.
Why?
What's wrong better. With? Thank you.
No, whatever. Anyway, so yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody about cheese in the kitchen just seconds ago. So
why? Yeah.
Because somebody cooked something in the microwave and it smelled like cheese, and I talked about how cheese is good melted or shredded or cubed.
Uh-huh.
That's it. That's all I got.
Well, anyway.
So the Sopranos is coming back, apparently.
Yeah, the Sopranos are. Yes,
Sopranos.
They
yeah.
are.
Right,
and well, it's a prequel.
Now, will it feature a young Tony Soprano?
Well, let's see. In the 60s, so I would think he'd be a little kid. So it's probably going to be a lot about his dad, his father.
Yeah. And Uncle Junior.
And Uncle Junior, absolutely. And Paulie.
Okay. Very good. Well,
because Paulie ran around with the dad when he was young, too. So.
And they did flashbacks of that era all the time,
yeah,
too.
And it was pretty cool.
All right. Very good. So to look forward to.
Well, I think you should. Here is a project for you.
If you're going to tell me to watch something, I'm not going to do it.
Why?
You know why?
You've been looking for things to binge watch.
I've got This Is Us that I want to binge watch. I'm still trying to get through Game of Thrones, which I absolutely love. I've got some other things, too.
This Is Us? Really? Why don't you just turn the Lifetime channel on and leave it on?
He's doing it to make somebody happy, I'm sure.
No.
So anyway.
For the record, no, I'm not.
Anyway.
Let's move on.
You should. I think you should binge watch Sopranos. I'm not kidding. No, but are you into mobster stuff at all?
No. I'm not. I'm not into mobster stuff.
All right. Well,
so, no.
And this is more of a New Jersey-based mob, not a New York-based mob. So it's, I loved it.
I'm sure there's a big difference between New Jersey and New York mobs.
There is, actually.
Okay, well, whatever. I'm also not a big...
Study some history.
I'm not into mob stuff. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I just don't
but
not into
it. But it's also history, too, you know?
I've got an interview scheduled
there
like
is
right
the
now,
latest
so
news brought to you.
Well,
don't fight with me. Lowe's. It's brought to you by Lowe's. Traffic and weather next.
138 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Well, big doings with North Korea. And, of course, President Trump now agreeing to meet with Kim Jong-un. What a welcome on in Jamie McIntyre with the Washington Examiner. Jamie, we've spoken to you many times. You write for Defense and National Security on Defense and National Security for the Washington Examiner. Jamie, always glad to have you on. So were you surprised the fact that now they're considering they're actually going to have a one-on-one meeting? Oh, I guess it would help if I put you on the air. Go ahead, Jamie. Appreciate you calling in.
I was very surprised that Trump immediately agreed to the meeting. I didn't expect that. We knew the South Korean delegation was coming to brief the White House. We knew that they had they'd already given us an idea of what North Korea had pledged. And we knew that the South Korean president had agreed to meet with Kim Jong-un next month. That was one of the preconditions. These were all preconditions the United States had set for any sort of dialogue with the North, namely that they stop immediately their nuclear and missile tests, that we not do anything different with our military drills with South Korea, and that the main thing was that the North would have to commit to denuclearization, which, by the way, they've written into their constitution that nuclear weapons are part of their national rights. So I didn't expect that they would meet all those conditions and that the president would accept right away. You know, normally the way these things work is they get the invitation from the North Koreans. The president says, thank you. He, talks to his national security team. He consults with allies, and then a couple of days later, we begin to hear that the president might actually be going. But he just accepted on the spot. He just said, okay, I'll go.
Well, now, Jamie,
that was a big surprise.
Well, you tell me, Jamie, is that a good thing or a bad thing that the president accepted right away?
Well, you know, a lot of this depends on how this turns out. You know, you could see how fast this was happening in that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who presumably would be, is our chief diplomat and would be the guy in charge of arranging these talks and figuring out what we're going to do. He had no idea this was coming. Just earlier in the day, and he's a little bit ahead of us because he's in Africa, He said, we're a long way from any negotiations. Today, he had to come up with a new explanation. Basically, he said, well, the president's going to talk, not necessarily negotiate. But these details are all to be worked out. Here's the thing. You know, we've done this before several times. The most notable time was back in 1994 when we negotiated a very complicated agreement with North Korea to give up its nuclear program, which then wasn't fully mature. And we were going to give them all kinds of things, some light water reactors for energy and some heavy fuel oil that you could burn for fuel, but you couldn't run tanks and military equipment on. And you know, more importantly, was international recognition and access to the banking system and, you know, basically welcoming into the family of the international community. And that looked like it was working for a number of years until North Korea decided to cheat on the agreement and to pursue nuclear weapons through another path by dealing with Pakistan and the notorious Pakistani nuclear physicist A.Q. Khan. So we've seen times in the past where it looked like we were going to solve this whole thing peacefully, and it didn't work out. So that's the concern this time, is how genuine Kim Jong-un really is in his willingness to give up his nukes.
Well, isn't the problem, Jamie McIntyre joins us from the Washington Examiner, writes on defense and national security, isn't the problem that he can say all he wants that he's willing to denuclearize, but how do we possibly confirm it? I mean, is there a way to say trust but verify? I don't see how we can do the first part of that, which is trust. And can we do the second part, which is verify?
Well, the big part, you know, it's, you don't need to trust them. You need, you just need verification, and then more verification. And that's going to be one of the, and that takes a long time to negotiate. The kind of, you know, no notice intrusive inspections that you would need to know that they'd really giving up their nuclear program. And that's where, of course, you can have this sort of lofty language and goals that we're going to denuclearize. But when you start getting down to the details, take one agreement. So for instance, in theory, North Korea would give up its nuclear weapons in return for security guarantees that they wouldn't be invaded and that they wouldn't have a threat from the United States military. Now, we interpret that as basically us saying, look, we're not going to invade. You know, we have a treaty and we're going to stand by our word. But North Korea typically has read that as the United States pulling all of its troops out of South Korea and ending all these military exercises. So those are two different versions of what you would consider to be security guarantees. And that's where the nitty-gritty of these negotiations can break down.
So is this the kind of thing where, you know, the president and Kim Jong-un and all of their various folks in their administration, they're going to get together in a neutral third place? Or do you see President Trump actually going to North Korea? That can't be safe.
Yeah, no, well, I don't, that would be giving too much. That would be a concession right at the beginning.
Yeah.
One of the things that we don't want to do is we don't want to reward Kim Jong-un just for showing up and smiling at us across the table. We need to see some real movement. And so, yes, they would meet in a neutral place, maybe in Beijing or maybe in the Panmunjom Truce Village, the peace village that's in the DMZ. That's where Kim is meeting with Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, next month. That's one possibility. You know, Kim Jong-un is already, by getting President Trump to come meet with him, is already being treated as an equal, which is something that North Korea has always wanted. They always wanted to be treated as, you know, a great superpower like the United States. And so that's part of the attraction. You know, nobody expects a lot to happen in this initial, you know, face-to-face between Trump and Kim. But we also don't want Trump to sort of walk in and get sandbagged and come out looking like he's been played by the North Korean dictator. So a lot of work's going to go on furiously these next couple of weeks, trying to lay the foundation, figure out what they can agree to ahead of time, make sure they set up a meeting that's going to look like a success and doesn't embarrass the United States, and hopefully starts a process, a long process, that maybe could really resolve this peacefully.
One of the things that, and I'm just reading a headline now, that apparently some folks are skeptical as to whether the Trump administration and his quote-unquote understaffed administration, they may lack the expertise to successfully turn a, quote, political spectacle long sought by Pyongyang, this is kind of what you were going with, Jamie, into a meaningful opportunity to convince North Korea to abandon its nuclear program. Why do you think that... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, a lot of people are pointing to the fact that the administration's point man on North Korea, Joseph Yun, who has a lot of experience in this area, just recently resigned, and that they don't have a lot of bench strength at the State Department. But, you know, they have a Secretary of State, Tillerson, who is, as long as he actually knows what's going on, should be able to help.
Right.
This is a very important initiative. They'll be able to pull together people who can work with us. And don't forget, even our most accomplished diplomats in the past have tried and failed to negotiate something that really held up. So, you know, I'm not too worried about whether they'll be able to conduct negotiations. And plus, I think they have all the right instincts. One of them being, don't let up on the pressure. Keep the sanctions on. They are biting. Keep the military threat on. You know, don't give up anything until we get something in return. And we're looking for concrete actions, not just words. Otherwise, this will just fall apart like previous efforts have.
Yeah, and one of the questions that, and I interview all kinds of people on all kinds of stuff, including North Korea, and there seems to be a disagreement over whether or not President Trump really forced Kim Jong-un into this place where he is coming to the table. Some folks will say that the president, really his aggressive nature on Twitter, didn't really have anything to do with it. Other people will say it had everything to do with it. So what say you? I know the president has been very aggressive with sanctions and really ratcheting up the pressure, forcing Kim Jong-un to the table. And as I said, some people have differing views as to how well that's worked. I would say that this is, well, you tell me. What do you say?
Well, really, if you look at where that comes down, very partisan Republicans want to give Trump a lot of credit, and very partisan Democrats don't want to give him any credit.
Right.
I think a couple of things are clear no matter which side of the aisle you're on. One of them is the increased sanctions really have hurt North Korea. The reason they've hurt is because China has done more. One of the things Trump really pushed for was for China to do more. He reached out to Xi Jinping very early. And yeah, some people have complained that he was too friendly with Xi Jinping or that he bragged too much. But the fact of the matter is China did put a lot of pressure. And, you know, dismissing whether or not it was presidential or smart or to call him Little Rocket Man and talk about fire and fury, the U.S. did, you know, also have the stick of military force that they talked about. And that combination of, you know, having a strong military posture and tough sanctions and increased political pressure seems to have brought Kim along. I also point out, though, that this could be part of Kim's plan all along. For a while now, we've been thinking that the reason he intensified all these missile tests and nuclear tests was to get to a point where he could declare victory, that he has a nuclear arsenal, that he is a nuclear power, and he could negotiate from that position of strength. And he seems to have done that. He accelerated missile tests and nuclear tests far more than his predecessors.
Sure.
He did get to the point where he can now threaten the United States. We're not sure if he has all the capability he claims. So part of it could also be that just this has been his timeline all along, and it just coincided with that. So, you know, I think there are many, many factors, but you can't deny that the combination of military force and sanctions and help from China helped bring us to this point. And also the overtures from the South Koreans, who were very anxious to get some kind of deal, particularly around the Olympics. So
yeah.
I think the South Korean president gets some credit as well.
Last question here, Jamie. We know that people in North Korea, the citizens of North Korea, they're starving and their educational system is not so great. Do you see that if there is anything that comes out of this, do you see it ultimately helping the people of North Korea, or will it just help Kim Jong-un and his his government?
Well, you know, if Kim Jong-un actually cared about his people, we would have resolved this a long time ago, because he would have been open to international aid that would have helped the people of his country. He seems to care only about his own regime and his own power. But if we normalize relations with North Korea, even though it's a dictatorship, and we're able to get the nuclear weapons out, and they have access to more trade and be part of the world economic community, there will definitely be some benefit to the North Korean people. You know, you don't have to do a lot for the North Korean people for their lot in life to be lifted, because they're, as you said, they're living in abject poverty, most of the nation, and they are starving, and they live in a very brutal dictatorship. So really, any improvement would be good. And, you know, one of the most stark pictures that they have hanging up in the Pentagon, there's a copy of it in the press room, is a night satellite picture taken of the Korean Peninsula back in 2002. It's one that Donald Rumsfeld used to use as a briefing chart. And you can see the Korean Peninsula. South Korea is all lit up. Seoul is a bright, big, bright, lit-up spot, and the whole country's lit. And the North Korea is completely dark, with just a tiny pinpoint of light at Pyongyang. Yeah. That's the difference between living under those two systems. Same people, same peninsula, two different systems, two vastly different outcomes.
Jamie McIntyre, always love having you on, and you have a great afternoon and a great weekend. It is 1:52.